But the basic foundation of metaphysics is you are not your body. You are a soul inhabiting your body. The physical world did not just create itself. It was created from the spiritual worlds. So what happens though, we kind of get mesmerized by the physical world and we think we are physical beings. The Hindu mystics would call this the world of Maya. You're living in the world of illusion. Not that the world is illusory, but when we think the five physical senses is all there is to perception, that's an illusion.
Welcome, dear listeners, to another enlightening episode of the Mindfulness Experience podcast, where we embark on the journey of spiritual understanding and personal transformation. I'm your host, Keith Fiveson, and today we're honored to be joined by Dimitri Moraitis. Did I have that right, Dimitri? I think so. He's the co-founder and spiritual director of the Spiritual Arts Institute. And Dimitri has been really instrumental in shaping the Spiritual Arts Institute into the premier metaphysical school that it is today, along with his co-author and partner, Barbara Y. Martin. Together, they have authored international bestsellers, including Change Your Aura, Change Your Life, Communing with the Divine, and Karma and Reincarnation, which I'm really interested in talking about. And he's going to provide us with some really profound insights into spiritual evolution. So without further ado, let's welcome Dimitri. Dimitri, hi.
Hey, thank you for having me on your show. It's a pleasure.
Hey, I am so excited to have you here and so excited to talk about this subject of spirituality and what does spirituality mean. So I really want to get into that with you, if you're okay with that. What do you think? We can dive into
it? Let's do it.
All right, good. So I know you, I looking at your bio, it's incredibly impressive. You've got a career in motion pictures to co-founding the Spiritual Arts Institute, and it's really fascinating. And I'm wondering if you can share with our listeners perhaps a pivotal moment of your spiritual awakening, if you will, and what really led you to embark on the path of metaphysics. Maybe we can unpack what metaphysics is.
Right. I know a lot of words are thrown out there right now. Yeah. You know, it's funny, we all have our turning point, right? For some people, it's gradual over time. Some say, gosh, I was born interested from a little kid. I was fascinated by all of this. But for me, it was definitely a turning point. As you mentioned, I was interested in movies and television, and I was also a classical pianist. And so arts was very much my life, you know? And, you know, I had a good upbringing, and I went to Los Angeles to, you know, that's where you find your fame and fortune in movies, is Los Angeles, you know? And, it was actually going well. I was having, though, these, at the time, again, I didn't even know what the word metaphysics was. So I was having these, I just call them sort of my inspiration moments. These are moments of heightened insight and clarity. You know, I was very, unbalanced or anything like that. But it kind of came like the wind and it left like the wind. I had absolutely no control over it. And, you know, in the arts, you're kind of already tuned into that thing you can't put your finger on, right? So again, I just thought that was part of the process, but it got so strong, I eventually had an undeniable spiritual awakening. But even at that moment, I didn't have a name for it. Someone said, oh, you had a religious experience. So I didn't feel quite like that. And then when I did hear the word metaphysics, they said, bingo, that's it, you know? And I couldn't get enough of it. Again, living in Los Angeles, there is a lot of opportunity to research and find out about it. So, I mean, I was literally blocks away from the Manly Hall Philosophical Research Society, you know. So that was the first place I went to buy some books on it. But I was careful about joining a group. And I had a girlfriend at the time and, you know, I couldn't stop talking about it. So, you know, she said, oh, there's this woman that's going to do this meditation at this dinner I'm going to. Do you want to join? And I thought, okay, I'll go. And it was Barbara, you know, and Barbara's a generation older than me. And, She led a meditation. It was the first time I meditated. Mm-hmm. And it was literally like feeling that ancient door opening again. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, I guess I felt very comfortable talking to her. I had all these questions. And I thought we were having a great conversation. She said afterwards, boy, you really interrogated me that first night, you know, but I really wanted to know. And after a while, I'm realizing, you know what? She's talking from her own experiences, you know, especially when we're talking about the other side. And oh my God. And I realized by the end of the night, this is the one I have to study with. So I became a student right away. But it was such a, we also realized we both liked to write. So we became writers. But I started to realize pretty soon I was trying to do both worlds, but I began to realize, you know what? This is my destiny. I'm meant to be in metaphysics, not in movies.
So what is metaphysics? I mean, is it because, you know, one of the things I'm aware of when we talk about meditation or, you know, even mindfulness, a lot of people think it's really woo-woo and, you know, it's just sort of this other thing. I mean, what is your perspective? Well, what is metaphysics? Yeah.
Literally, metaphysics means after physics. So what it's trying to do is it's trying to show the spiritual roots of physical life. So the basic foundation of metaphysics is you are not your body. You are a soul inhabiting your body. The physical world did not just create itself. It was created from the spiritual worlds. So what happens, though, we kind of get mesmerized by the physical world and we think we are physical beings. The Hindu mystics would call this the world of Maya. You're living in the world of illusion. Not that the world is illusory, but when we think the five physical senses is all there is to perception, that's an illusion, right? That we have to wake up from. So the idea of meditation and spiritual pursuits is to discover that inner life from your own experience. Now, you may start by following an instruction or something, but in the end, it's got to be you experiencing this. And then also understanding how this is connected to the outer life. Not, you know, we used to have classes, some were saying, oh, I don't know how much time to dedicate to my spiritual life, how much time to dedicate to my earth life. And we'd say, well, you've already divided the house. It's not physical and spiritual, it's all spiritual.
So when I look at metaphysics, and I want to break that word down, you know, meta meaning the mind, or metta, M-E-T-T-A, which could mean loving kindness, right? Physics being—
Well, no, it comes from Aristotle, where literally he was talking about after physics.
So it's beyond physics. So from a quantum physics perspective, a lot of people will say, you know, quantum physics really is about your projection, you being able to project reality into the world. In other words, whatever you're experiencing on the internal side, you can create in the external side. But you're talking about more than that. Yeah, you're talking about otherworldly experience.
Well, the way to think of it, another way to think of it. So look, we're understanding more about the atom, you know, the physical world.
Right.
But the physical world, even on the quantum level, is still the physical spectrum of life. Right. It's just we're understanding that spectrum in a lot more detail. Again, the Indians have a great word for it. They call it prakriti, right? The primordial material out of which the physical world is made of. But even they teach you're supposed to surmount prakriti. You're supposed to go beyond it. So just like there's a visible light spectrum, you know, how we see each other physically right now, that's just a tiny part of the
spectrum. Just a small part of it,
So if we think of the spectrum of life, the physical is one part, but there's other dimensions. It's not woo-woo or it's just as much a part of life as we are. Helena Blavatsky, the great mystic, had a great saying. She would say, spirit is matter operating at its highest frequency, and matter is spirit operating at its lowest frequency. So it's all part of the same spectrum, but things are operating differently, and we have to understand the total us, who we totally are as a, as a spiritual being, if we want to be successful in our life here.
Well, I like this word spirit, and I use, I've talked about it on the show before, because the, you know, specifically as it relates to breath, you know, we do a lot of breath work, mindfulness work, and breath work is really about, you know, the root word, the Latin root word for breath, as you know, is spir, S-P-I-R, as in inspire, aspire, respire, expire. you know, without our, with everything is centered on the breath. And when we start moving into the world of breath, we know that there's energy there. There's energy in the breath we take in. There's energy as we let go of that breath. You know, there's a wonderful sigh in terms of releasing stress. You know, there's other areas. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, when we look at metaphysics, how much of this is involved in breath work? How much is it involved in intention? We started talking about intention before the show started. I'm really kind of wondering your view of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, what is breath? It's an exchange, right? I love the American Indian, was a teaching. I may be paraphrasing it slightly, but you know, we breathe out, the trees breathe in. Trees breathe out, we breathe in. So there's this exchange going on, right? There's gases coming in, gases going out. But yes, there is also prana going into the body. So there, it, through the breath, especially when there is a mindfulness behind it, and it isn't just I'm trying to get oxygen, you are, it is another way of connecting with the spirit life, because we speak of the holy breath, that God created the universe through breath, you know.
Right, and it's the Holy Trinity, right? Father, so Son, and the Holy Spirit.
It's a very, breathing on a spiritual dimension is, we even say in our light work, the light comes in through the holy breath, you know. So yes, and how you breathe, and the again, now the intention is important, because the mind is the navigator of the soul. So where we direct our consciousness, that's where we're going, you know. So I like to think of it, okay, if our soul, if our body's like a ship on the sea, and our soul are like the people on the ship, well, our mind is the captain, our mind is the navigator. Where the captain says, okay, we're going this way, that's where we're going. So if you haven't, if you're pursuing something with a sense of intention, then there is a co-creative part of this. You're feeling you're part of the creative process of life, not a passive bystander. And then, of course, again, you're going to be more creative and more expressive.
So intention is the rudder of the ship, so to speak. And that'll, and what you think about, you bring about, where, you know, energy, where your mind goes or where your thoughts go, energy flows.
The mind concept is incredible. You know, in most mystical traditions, a tremendous amount of energy was placed on the development of the mind. Because if you don't have that mind razor sharp, it's going to be hard to do this navigating, you know, and your ability to concentrate. We have some, when they start the, our classes, they say, well, you know, I'd have a hard time concentrating. Well, the mind is like a muscle. So if you're saying I can't lift more than 10 pounds, well, okay, today you can't lift more than 10, but if you keep exercising, you're going to lift more. Well, if you start training the mind to discipline it, many of us have the monkey mind, and right now we're so inundated with information, we don't know what to shut off and let in. We have to clear all that so that the mind is still and centered, and you are in control of your mind and thoughts, not your thoughts in control of you.
Well, you know, I have so many questions to ask you, but I want to stay where we are for the moment. Because I want to get into the concept of the monkey mind, and more specifically about what people, what keeps people from being razor sharp or present. And in my work, you know, one of the reasons I was talking with someone earlier about mindfulness, about the ability to recognize and choose their paths, and that's really the purpose of mindfulness, is to have recognition and choice, right? Because everyone would like to be able to recognize, you know, what is taking them off of that path. What's veering them away. And in our trauma-ridden society, because we are trauma-based, there is a lot of, if you will, hijacking. You know, it would be emotional hijacking or amygdala hijacking, where individuals move into fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And I'm wondering, when you look at your work, how do you approach individuals who have had a lot of trauma in their lives, And, you know, I mean, I'm also involved in the psychedelics area where, you know, people are getting breakthroughs or, you know, being able to step away from their own vehicle to see their traumas and then heal their traumas. But that's still not enough, right? They still need to activate and bring it into their lives, which is where mindfulness comes in. I'm wondering, in your work, what does that look like? Because a lot of people can do spiritual bypass, you know, and that's...
It's a great question. I have to say, one of the areas I think we've seen the most success is in what you're describing right now. What we have to realize is a traumatic experience is just that. It's an experience. It's not an identity. Mm-hmm. It's not who you are. So you want to be careful that you're not identifying yourself with your experiences. Mm-hmm. You are that immortal spark of life. You are that precious divine soul. Sometimes we go through dark nights of the soul. It's part of the human experience. We all go through it at different points in our life, you know, where it seems like, you know, we're in the deep of night, and we are at that moment. But ironically, what do they say when you're standing at the abyss and it feels like nothing is supporting you? What is there? It's you, right? You're right. Seeing you kind of bare, and you're seeing yourself as you really are. And that's the test also each of us have to go through. You know, we talk about suffering and things like that. The story of Job, right, in the Bible, the righteous person that went through all this suffering. Well, again, I'm quoting people here a little bit today. You know, Helen Blavatsky just said it in a sentence. That's the story of initiation par excellence. So we have to go through these trials. You know, in that saying, he says, that which I feared most has come upon me. So when we face our deepest fears, when we face the things that have challenged us the greatest, and we come out the other side, then we have truly succeeded. But the first step is to realize we can come out the other side. It may take some time. These things get buried sometimes. Now, again, we work a lot with the auric field. So these traumas can kind of show up in the aura. They especially go into the subconscious mind, the memory, these, you know, like post-traumatic stress.
Implicit right? memory,
So, but the thing we don't always realize is, okay, let's say if I went through a horrible battle and I survived it, okay, I'm not in the battle now, right? But the memory of it, when it pops up, the body is not distinguishing between actually literally being there and not. So it's like you're in the battlefield all over again, right? When there was the 9/11 and we were seeing the towers coming down, I was reading, they had to stop because little children didn't realize it was the same image. Every time they saw the tower falling down, they thought it was another building falling down, and it was adding trauma on top, you know, it was compounding So it's our attitude. Now, you can work with spiritual energy to try to release this. I'll just try to give a very brief thing here. And this is the beginning of my own work with Barbara. I did a lot of work helping her in healing. And there was a woman that came in one of our healing circles, and I never felt the energy like that before, helping her out. Never. I mean, like a bolt of lightning, and she burst into tears. It was just a remarkable experience, kind of a thing for me. But later, we discovered when we were helping her counsel, she'd been through probably, at least up to that point, by far the worst sexual abuse of a child that I'd ever heard in my life. I just couldn't imagine that could happen to a child, right? So, and she... to deal with it, she eventually, you know, just put it out of her mind. She had amnesia. She forgot it. She submerged that the whole thing happened. She ran away from home. When we met her, she had been working at a mortuary. But she was having these you know, depression. She couldn't figure out what it was. Again, the memory was submerged. She went to a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist brought it out, but she couldn't handle it, so she tried to commit suicide. Thank God she failed, you know. And then it wasn't until she started working with the light to go in there that she was actually able to start to heal all these old things. And she had a gorgeous voice. I mean, there was a lot of talent, all these things there, but she found herself, and then she was able to get married, and she got her life back. you know. And, you know, my father was a very good psychiatrist, so, you know, I knew this world very well. Mm-hmm. Seeing where certain types of therapy, like you say, can only take you so far, right. But then there are other, more getting deeper into the spiritual, really actually turned the keys so she could start to put this behind her, you know.
So I really like what you say, and I want to sort of unpack it in terms of my understanding of it. So what I hear you saying is that, you know, we're not talking about spiritual bypass, which is somehow believing in something else, which is not necessarily at the root cause of my trauma. What we're really talking about is using your own spiritual tools, your own, whether or not it's breathing or light work or being able to understand that you yourself are not the trauma, and that you yourself can go inside, perhaps with the help of a teacher or some co-facilitator or someone who is a witness to you, to help you to use that metta, use that loving kindness, use that healing light to bring to the surface, go into the dark, and use the light to bring that to the surface, to then apply the loving kindness that you need to own your story. Yeah.
And heal from it.
And heal from it, yeah.
Again, absolutely. Heal from it, to put it behind you.
Yeah.
Make it a thing of the past.
Yeah.
You know, not a memory that's still haunted, but exactly right. You have to know, metaphysics is not we tell people, look, these meditations are not a genie. They're not a magic wand. They're not going to make you suddenly. They're not bypassing the normal growth process. Mm-hmm. You have to go through all of it.
Right.
But when you have these tools, like you're describing, you can go through it more successfully and with your chances of sustained success more fully. A very simple one here. Well, not so simple for her. One of our ladies in her classes, she had, well, after what we just heard the other day, I can understand it. She had a physical fear of crossing over bridges, right? Right. I mean, palpable fear, right? Crossing a bridge. Mm-hmm. And to get to work, God bless her, she had to cross 3 bridges, right? So she was in therapy for years and still couldn't get over this fear, right? And, you know, it wasn't like a month or two of the light work. It was, I think, more like 6 months or more. Mm-hmm. It took a little while. But one day she said, she reported, I went to work and I forgot I'd even crossed over 3 bridges. It was a non-issue.
Non-event, yeah.
That's what's healed. When that thing becomes a non-issue in your life, and you can say, yeah, one time I had these fear of bridges. I couldn't even, I was like hyperventilating when I got near one, you know. And now I don't even, it's just like I'm driving.
Right, right. You know, it's so funny, Dimitri, what you're saying, and so poignant in another way, because I want to normalize it in terms of the conversation. I talk about change your story, change your life, right? You know, because if you can make those implicit memories explicit, and then you can offer the narrative around it, and then just accept the narrative, right? Then you can move forward. And you're talking about it in terms of being able to bring out that heaviness out of it and really move into the light, literally the light of the light.
Yeah, well, there are, you know, the thing is, in our aura, there are unenlightened energies.
Right.
Okay, it's not all rosy in that aura, unfortunately. You know, so let's say if I'm in a fear state, I'm going to have this gray in my aura. I have to get rid of that fear, but I also have to replace it. So I need courage, right? Why am I afraid? What is holding me back? Why don't I ask that person out for a date? Or why don't I ask for that job over there? Why am I, it's, I want it. I think it's a good fit. My fear gets in the way of me, right? So there's a lesson there. You know, so the other part we talk about, Earth is a school. If the soul is immortal, if the soul is non-material, what is it doing in the material world?
Right.
Well, it's learning and growing. It's through the experiences, it's learning and growing. And the other thing is, don't be afraid to make mistakes, for God's sakes.
Right.
Sometimes we're condemning ourselves. Right?
Right.
Oh, yeah. God.
I'll, we can be our own worst critic. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly exactly. Terrible. Now, the one thing the divine has shared with us, don't worry about making mistakes, but we have seen you make the same mistake 20, 30 times. So when not learning from our mistakes, that's when things start to feel miserable. Because then we start to feel, we start to get discouraged, like, this is just the way it is. No, it isn't. It's because you're not trying hard enough. Don't settle. It's right. A weird human thing that sometimes we get comfortable in our miseries. And we need someone to kind of poke us.
Right. If I don't have my misery, then who am I?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I mean, you know,
it's a friend. It's a strange friend, but it's a friend nevertheless.
Yeah. You know, and Dimitri, you talk about aura. I know you have a groundbreaking work. You know, you have this work, Change Your Aura, Change Your Life. And it's a groundbreaking work that really has touched a lot of lives. I'm wondering, how does understanding and working with your aura really contribute to spiritual growth and well-being? What is that? Yeah.
Well, the aura is the fuel of your evolution. The most precious thing you possess is your light.
So, like, okay, just so we back up a little bit, let's back it up. So I have been, you know, I've had my aura done, and I know your auras can change and people have different auras, and I don't know what the machine is called, that I don't know if that's...
Yeah, those are not accurate.
So tell us about what is an aura manifestation?
We got to remember, the aura is not physical. If it was, my clients would have discovered it a long time
ago. They go into the machine and they could figure it out.
But that's not we met the originator of that, and he finally confessed to us it's a spectrometer.
It's a spectrometer. Yeah. Okay.
It's kind of like a fancy mood ring.
Got it. Okay. All right. So tell us a little bit about auras, and tell us a little bit about how do you change your aura and change your life?
Right. So the aura is the energetic blueprint of the soul. Mm-hmm. Everything you're thinking right now, feeling, your career, your finance, it's all showing up in your auric field. It's not like you're a green, I'm a blue. Mm-hmm. The aura is more complicated than the human body. There's a lot going on there. Now, it's the foundation of everything. So if you want to generate anything in your life, you need power to do it. And the power you do it, you start, is in your aura. I'll give you a very simple example of this. So when I was first met Barbara, I was still in the showbiz world. And again, I was young. I was still in my 20s, you know. And at that point, you know, sometimes, especially in the creative side, it's a feast or famine. You're working all the time doing something, or you're not working at all, right?
Right.
So I was in that mode where I wasn't working one day, and Barbara, for all her talent, she's so understated sometimes when she speaks, she casually looked at, you know, referred me, oh, I see this beautiful turquoise. She was looking at my heart chakra. She says, I see this beautiful turquoise light coming out of you, which is the energy of prosperity. Now, at that moment, it wasn't there. But 2 weeks later, literally 2 weeks later, I got the most lucrative offer in the business I'd ever gotten up to that point. Okay. So the energy of that, and I was making efforts, but the energy, until it gets there, it's not going to show up. One of the divine laws is, if it's in your aura, it will show up in your life. So what you want to do, why is that person so successful? You know, you don't want to, you know, commiserate your troubles again.
Right.
Yeah. If you see somebody is in a position that you would like to be in, I would like to have that kind of wealth or that kind of power, whatever it is, work towards it. You know, use them as an example. Not they just got the lucky end of the lollipop.
Right. Or
you know. And then that's the key. And the two ways you do it, number one, every good word, thought, act, and deed. So everything you do really does matter. Even if you're not getting the gold star, if you aren't getting the pat on the back, if you help that person and they benefited, even if they don't thank you for it, I did all that for them, they didn't even say thank you. But it's showing up in your aura, because you're doing things that are contributing to life. Now, the other way is meditation, but not just meditation. It's what we were talking about before, meditation and application. So another quick example, we had a doctor in one of the classes, and he confessed. He said, you know, I don't show enough compassion for my patients. See a lot a day and kind of in and out. And let's face it, some doctors treat people like Petri dishes, right? It's just like science projects.
Right. 20 minutes, next.
Yeah. 20 minutes. Sometimes it's 5 minutes, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But he knew there was something wrong there, because he's dealing with people, not Petri dishes. So he had to work with the energy of compassion, which comes through as a deep rose pink energy in the aura. But then he had to actually be compassionate. So he made sure he took time with his patients and made a connection, right? They call it the good bedside manners. Mm-hmm. But that they were, and he said, he reported later, gosh, not only are my patients loving it, my practice is getting even busier.
Even better, yeah.
Busier. Yeah, because people are saying, this is a guy to go to.
Right.
So he had the skill, but he also developed the people skill. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're adding, you have to apply the light. Mm-hmm. So you can call it in, mm-hmm. but unless you're applying it, and if you don't apply it, Barbara would give examples like taking two steps mm-hmm. forward and two steps back.
Right.
So if you're living your truth, whatever your truth, you know, you're doing, you're not, it's just a nice idea in your head. It's not, until it's alive in your heart,
right.
it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I always say, you know, what you appreciate appreciates, and what you depreciate depreciates. Very simple, you know. It's what you appreciate appreciates. I mean, you know, and that's, you know, you want to appreciate the things that you want to look yeah. around for things to appreciate, you know, rather than things to appreciate.
That's a great point, because that's the other thing we mistakenly do. We look at all that's wrong all the time.
Right.
And, you know, what the news do today, if it bleeds, it leads.
Exactly.
Good, yeah. it's there, you know. So, yes, gratitude.
Gratitude.
If people start expressing gratitude for what they have rather than what they don't have,
yeah.
they're going to have a much better attitude in yeah. their life.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, of course, your altitude. Your attitude depends your altitude, right? Your, I mean, that's a whole other thing.
I see you have some.
Come up with all these. It's one of the ways I can learn about things.
Yeah, but, no, I like that. I like that.
It's I want to ask you something. Go ahead.
You know,
what was that?
You should write a book with each of those little.
Yeah, I have some of that. I have some of that in my book, The Mindfulness Experience.
Oh, you have a book.
Yeah, I do have a book. But you've written so many books. You have another book, which I really want to get into, because, you know, I mean, death is a big subject for me. I like talking, as morbid as it may sound, I like talking about death. I think if the more we come closer to our relationship with death, the greater our relationship is with life. So.
Right. That it's so important.
Right, I mean, right.
If we understood that death is not the end of life, just that one point, can you imagine how society would change?
Right. I mean, and if we didn't deny death, then imagine how much more we could appreciate life and recognize that, you know, we've got to do what we can here. But you've got
I do love Woody Allen's line on death. He says, I'm not afraid of death. I just don't want to be there when it happens.
Right. That's great. That's great. Now, you have a new book, right? It's Heaven and Your Spiritual Evolution,
right?
Which really leads us into the topic or the conversation around death. And that explores some profound concepts about the afterlife, about reaching one's highest potential. And I'm wondering if you could provide our listeners with a glimpse into the insights that you share in the book. And, you know, really, you know, is death, for many, death is the end of life. It's, you know, all we have is now, and we better get ours while we can, because someone else is going to get them and we can't enjoy, you know, I mean, we got to accumulate and make sure nobody else gets something while we're alive. We'll leave it to them when we're dead. You know, I mean,
doesn't that sound wonderful the way you just put it?
I mean, yeah, really. Exactly. Right. You know, I'm wondering if you can just share some of those insights.
Yeah. Boy, there's a lot to talk about there.
Maybe two or one or two.
The
that comes to your mind.
As far as the life beyond. So the reason we wrote the book. Mm-hmm. is to, well, there's kind of a twofold process. One was to explore what the other side is like. So to get a demystify the other side. It's not really this side and the other side. It's just part of the whole of life. Mm-hmm. Just like we said, you're not a physical being, you're a spiritual being. Mm-hmm. You came from a spiritual world. So then there's a spiritual world from where you came. Mm-hmm. We're here temporarily. This is like a school. You don't stay in school forever. And then you go back home to the other side, and you actually know the other side better than you know this one.
So energy cannot be destroyed is what we're saying. Right. And we're all energetic beings, right?
Yeah. Soul cannot be destroyed. Life cannot be destroyed. Life mm-hmm. is life.
Okay.
We may not express it as much, or it may happen there. So, but then it goes back to, again, well, why are we making this lapse on Earth? Now, the other thing in the book, of course, is we say it's not womb to tomb. Mm. It's not one life. Or, okay, how you live this tiny infinitesimal life determines mm-hmm. eternity, Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine if we had to take a test tomorrow that determined the rest of this life? Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I get awfully nervous about that test.
Yes.
Okay, right? So that's also not reasonable when you think about it. But mm-hmm. if we also embrace the idea of reincarnation, that the soul comes back many times and each time is like a grade in school, then we start to realize evolution is a gradual process. And what we also try to show is that where you are, you know, okay, we're here to grow, but it also mm-hmm. means we have a potential for this mm-hmm. life. How far up that ladder are we going to grow in this incarnation?
Mm.
And to leave this world not only better than the way we found it, but a higher level of consciousness than when we started it. So the other side's not one place. The Bible talks about, you know, in my Father's house are many mansions. Mm-hmm. I go to prepare a place for you. And there are places to literally visit, but there are also states of consciousness. Now mm-hmm. on Earth, it's a little bit of a melting pot. You can have, you know, a Mahatma Gandhi, a highly evolved soul, standing next right. to an Adolf Hitler, not a highly evolved soul, mm-hmm. but physically they could be in the same space. Mm-hmm. On the other side, it will be less like that. You'll find yourself in an environment with people of a, not of a similar, say, character as you, but of a similar vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if I built up 50,000 watts of power, mm-hmm. I'm going to a plane on the other side corresponding to that 50,000 watts, mm-hmm. not 100, not 20. It's not reward or punishment, it's like attracting like. Mm-hmm. So we say the most important thing you can do on this earth is earn light, mm-hmm. because that spiritual energy you are taking with you to mm-hmm. the other side, not taking mm-hmm. your fame and fortune, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. you are taking your light.
Mm. So that's very interesting in terms of understanding that, because, you know, from a metaphysics perspective, I often wonder, you know, when we move into, when this physical realm dissipates, right, and we move as an energetic being, whether or not we ascend or we descend based on the quality of the light, based on the lightness. Right. The lightness or the heaviness of the dark or the light,
right. Rather, did we earn light or did we lose light?
And then in that ascension, whether or not we come back, you know, from a Buddhist viewpoint, there are the six realms, and mm-hmm. in that Buddhist view, you know, we can come back as in the hell realm, as an animal, the animal realm, or we can come back as in the human realm or in the godly realm, whatever it is. So what you're talking about is really like, okay, what is that reincarnation? Does that have a lot to do with the light? And I'm wondering, you know, when you talked about, you know, God, or you talked about the afterlife, I'm wondering if there's a communion, something that we can do in this journey that we have to really cultivate that light and that deeper connection with the divine.
Well, if someone has had their awakening, first mm-hmm. of all souls are here to grow. Whether you're the hardest core atheist is still here to grow, mm-hmm. right? And there are people that are, don't use the word spiritual, but living a more spiritual life than those that, oh no, I'm very spiritual, but when you look at their life, it doesn't look so spiritual. Mm-hmm. But we used to say, what's the good of going to church on Sunday than cheating your partners on Monday, right?
Right.
So you have to live that truth right there. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing that, you are growing. Now, but if you've had the calling, if you've had the awakening, mm-hmm. then that's the time to really put your hands to the plow and take what we call the accelerated path.
Mm.
Well, Max Heindel, the Rosicrucian mystic, mm-hmm. he spoke of the mystical path in two ways, the slow, mm-hmm. gradual spiral mm-hmm. and the straight and narrow upward. And he called the straight and narrow the path of initiation. Hmm. So if you had the awakening, that means you're supposed to make this a high priority in your life. This is not accidental that you've had these. This mm-hmm. isn't just a curiosity thing like other things. So we keep encouraging people, especially this time on earth right now, to do your best to make your spiritual life the mm-hmm. centerpiece of your life. Mm-hmm. And then everything else will fall mm-hmm. into place around it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. You know, it's this higher vibration, this whole higher calling, this awakening that you call it, is really a sense of what? It's a sense of
it's an experience of the
consciousness, that watching of the seer, the watcher, the the sense that I am not my body, I'm really living this life. Is that the awakening that
you're talking about? It's also there's even though you may not have language for it, right? Mm-hmm. It's a taste, it's an experience of the actual inner life.
Right.
And then you know, because after my awakening, there was no going back. Mm. There was no going back to the other life, because once you've seen the other side of the rainbow, well, you've seen it. You know, your life has changed.
Right.
Not an experience. Although some people mistaken the awakening for the enlightenment. Mm. The awakening is the beginning of the road to enlightenment. You know, Buddha had other initiations before the one under the Bodhi tree, right? So that was the culminating moment. Mm-hmm. But he had other transformative moments. They don't talk about those as much because, you know, the Buddha tree is very glamorous experience,
right.
You know, but you have to earn it up to there. And but the goal is, you know, get involved. You know, now, as you know, it wasn't that long ago in human history. To talk about what we're talking about now, you'd have to be in a mystery school, you'd have to be in an ashram. It was not common knowledge to the public, but there are so many people now ready for this knowledge that it's opening up to a wider audience, and we can talk about this over the airwaves, you know?
Right,
it's
right.
Remarkable.
Right, which is really quite, you know, it's great and to a large extent. However, in many areas there are many sort of neo shamans, people who, you know, claim to be healers, but they're really just looking to make sure that you've got a credit card, you know.
And you know, that's false prophets.
False prophets, if you will. I'm wondering now, the Spiritual Arts Institute offers workshops and training classes led by you and Barbara. Can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, the experience participants can expect, how they can contribute, you know, how they contribute the classes to spiritual growth? What are they all about?
Well, the motto of the Institute is helping souls grow. So we founded the Institute on all the teachings that Barb had accumulated on what we call the Kingdom of Light teachings. You know, I thought I was just going to be her student. I didn't realize she was training me also to be a teacher myself. But it's all geared towards spiritual growth. So, you know, I liken metaphysics, the study of metaphysics, to like learning a language or learning a musical instrument. You're not going to get great on it overnight. You've got to stick with it, you know. Now, we do offer single workshops and, you know, events, and we have the books. But I think what I consider what's really unique in our organization is these ongoing training classes. One of them, the foundational one, we call the 7 spiritual arts. So we know the 7 liberal arts was to train the mind, the intellect, how to handle the challenges of life, how to analyze, how to deduce, how to debate, you know, all these things.
Right.
The liberal arts were training you. So the spiritual arts are training you for the spiritual rigors of life. So yeah, when life does throw you a curveball, how do you handle it and keep your spiritual equilibrium and also continue to contribute and create, because we're all indispensable to the divine plan. I love this quote Barbara brought in from the higher. If one soul were missing, creation would not be complete. So we're not just here to wander around. We all have important roles to play. And we don't have to be the builder of the skyscraper. We can be the baker. You know, it doesn't, you know, the position itself is secondary. The important thing is how you're contributing and the heart you're putting into. Are you putting yourself into the things that you are doing?
So there are, you know, there's 8 billion people in the world. I like to say there's 8 billion realities, and we're all sort of microcosms in the macrocosm, you know, sort of living our life from the inside out. Many people are living lives from the outside in and don't recognize the power that they have inside to go ahead and change their life. So I'm a little curious, and I wouldn't say suspicious, but I'm a little curious as to how the stool offers a pathway for somebody who might be, you know, Judeo-Christian, Buddhist, Taoist, Hindu, or Zoroastrian, or whatever they might be, and what the 7 principles might be of these, of the.
Well, but there are different ways of expression. So another thing we say in our work is religion and metaphysics mix.
Say that again.
religion and metaphysics mix. They work together.
They mix, okay.
Excuse me, they're like two arms of the same body. Mm-hmm. They approach the spirit life a little differently, and the function is a little different, but this, I've seen sometimes this conflict between the two is human-made and not divine-made. Mm-hmm. But if you're called to live a religious life, or if you're called to live, you know, in a particular denomination, mm-hmm. then your job there is to bring that spirit through that faith that you have chosen to partake, because all the gen religions came from spiritual divine roots. This was not, they're human expressions of divine inspiration.
Right.
And if you're called to that, then you want to live that life. And how well are you living it? If you are feeling like, I want to live the life of a monk or a nun, okay, mm-hmm. but how are you doing it? Look at what Mother Teresa did. She mm-hmm. she took the vow of poverty, right? But boy, did she change the world. You know,
right. Well, but, you know, I like what Joseph Campbell says about, you know, the difference between religion and spirituality, you know, which is religion is the menu and spirituality is the meal. And, you know, I as an interfaith, I'm a interfaith minister, an MDiv. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I talk about is that, you know, think of religions as many boats, many ships, some are cruise lines that all have a sort of ports of call, if you will, but they're all on the same ocean. And the ocean, the ocean is the spirituality that really helps us drive. And what I hear you saying is that along the same line, the metaphysics is sort of the energetic pull that anyone can access, regardless of their religion. Yeah.
Yeah. Metaphysics also does make another, not claim, but aspiration. Mm-hmm. So with religion, you're living a lot by, of course, faith and belief, right? Mm-hmm. I believe in you, God, you know, and I'm going to live my life even to my death mm-hmm. on that belief. Now, metaphysics would say, okay, faith is the foundation of everything, but faith is not the end of the road. Mm-hmm. Faith is meant to give way to knowing. Mm. So in the end, you've got to do what Yogananda was talking about, Swami Yogananda, mm-hmm. is we're meant to, whether it's this life or another lifetime, we're meant to find God here. See God face to face here. Mm-hmm. Not say, mm-hmm. oh, when I die and cross over to the other side. Mm-hmm. That's the enlightenment that we seek. Mm-hmm. So this goal, so people say, well, okay, we meditate with a purple ray for peace. Well, why don't I just pray for peace? Why do I ask for purple ray? Because you're a metaphysician and you're trying to more consciously cooperate with the process mm. that's already going on. Mm-hmm. When you pray for peace, God is sending you to you through the purple light. Mm. But mm-hmm. now you're cooperating with that process. So mm-hmm. it's deepening the experience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's interesting because, you know, I also believe that, you know, different colors, different hues of light certainly have different vibrational quality.
I see you have a very colorful room there.
yeah. Well, I'm very, that's part of my, one of my chapters in my book is about the environment, about being able to live the, you know, I talk about living from the inside out, but there's also living from the outside in, that if you don't create a environment that is conducive of spirituality, then, you know, there's a challenge there. As we start sort of moving forward, I'm wondering, Dimitri, if you can talk to, and, you know, time-wise, you know, given for individuals that might feel lost or disconnected, that are really looking for that light, you know, what advice would you give them to help them rediscover perhaps their spiritual practice and maybe help them with direction?
Yeah, well, first of all, to realize that you're precious, that you matter, mm-hmm. you count, all right? So honor the divine presence in yourself, even if you may not fully feel it or recognize it, it's there. And then do your best to take, you know, sort of constructive steps. Mm-hmm. Do something that is either contributing to the betterment of another person's life or contributing to your own life in a creative, positive way. Mm. You know, the naysayers, the doomsday sayers, the net effect of that is, what does it matter? Mm-hmm. You know, do it or not. It does matter. Mm-hmm. So you need to take that and don't let the doom and gloomers mm-hmm. punch your balloon, you know? Mm-hmm.
you know? Right.
There's going to be a lot of people that are going to say, Let them think what they want, but don't let that discourage you. What did Shakespeare say? Tonight, own self be true, and you cannot be false to anyone. So you've got to exercise. Sometimes we're not strong enough. If someone comes in, they've got a strong will or something's going, we kind of like blow with the wind, you know. And in today's world, we got to be tougher than ever, you know. We got to be strong in our feet. And also to know that there is a divine, there is a divine love. There is an intelligence, whether you want to call it God or the infinite life or what words you want to use with it. But there is this wellspring of life that is there to work with you.
Not against you. That's wonderful. Yeah. So as we start to close, I'm just wondering, looking ahead, what are your aspirations for the Spiritual Arts Institute? And how do you envision the impact, if you will, on the spiritual landscape in the years to come? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, it's so funny you're saying that because, you know, having been doing this work now for 40 years, it's interesting to see there's a shift that's come on very recently. And I think there's a greater need for spiritual knowledge than ever before, because I'm surprised that I'm seeing people more discouraged. You know, when you look at statistics, well, things, you know, things are improving in many areas, but people think, no, it's all falling apart. So our goal is to really get this message out to as many people as we can. I know the value of this. I know it for myself. I've seen it in countless students through the years. I think, though, we're trying to make the work more available than it's been. You know, there's a lot of noise out there in the marketplace right now. A lot of, like you say, they're just looking for the credit cards, but they have a good marketing team behind them to get that credit card, right?
Right.
We're not going to fall for that kind of glam, you know, those hooks and things that, you know, people do. So it's a slower road because of that, but it's also more genuine. And I have to say, just when you're working in a business where you're meeting people like yourself and others that are on their path and they're looking to better, it's so rewarding to work with that, because you realize you aren't on your own. And if you're feeling you are on your own on this path, you're not. There are others that are on it too. And maybe it's not your spouse. Hopefully it is. But if it isn't, there are others. And the more you team with them, the more you can collaborate and support each other in the journey.
That's beautiful. Well, you know, I feel moved, touched, and inspired by you, and thankful when looking to have you on the show, and really very, very grateful to have you on the show. How do people get a hold of you or the Spiritual Arts Institute?
Well, we do offer classes. You know, we're in Encinitas, California, which is by San Diego. We have a beautiful center here. It's a beach town. Water's not nearby. Water's nearby, I mean. But we've been doing online classes since 2006, long before the Zoom era. So you can join from, we have people from all over the world, and God bless, you know. But it's basically spiritualarts.org. And then you can learn more.
Spiritualarts.org. Great. Excellent.
Yeah, nonprofit.
So thank you again, Dimitri. I really appreciate it. And I hope everyone follows up. Spiritualarts.com and
.org.
Spiritualarts.org. Thank you. And really, again, appreciate you taking the time to show up and share your wisdom.
Yeah. And thank you for the good work you're doing, too.
Thank you. Thank you, Dimitri Moraitis, for sharing your profound wisdom and insights with us today. Your journey from the realms of motion pictures to the spiritual landscape is truly inspiring, reminding us all of the transformative power of spiritual awakening. To our listeners, remember that the path of spiritual evolution is one of self-discovery and growth, and the Spiritual Arts Institute stands as a beacon of guidance and enlightenment on this journey. Stay mindful and stay in touch. This is Keith. We'll talk to you soon.